call the February 7th, 2023 Committee of the Whole Meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll at the time.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Here.
Commissioner Snyder?
Here.
Commissioner Spain?
Here.
Chair Brooks?
Here. Moving to matters from the public, it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person.
I see our budget meeting is packed.
Yes, yes. So we will move then to the fiscal year 2023-24 budget first draft review. John Quintero will review the proposed fiscal year 2023-24 budget first draft with the board and community.
All right, thank you, President Brooks. Good evening, everyone. So, obviously, here tonight to go over the fiscal 23-24 budget. Hopefully, everybody's had the opportunity to review the document. I know it's rather a thick document, a lot of information in there. The document did obviously take a lot of time and effort by a lot of folks in this room here. Brian Jacobs, our accounting manager, is here tonight. Helped out a great deal with budget documents, so I want to thank him. Definitely want to thank Bobby, Kyle, Aaron for their help with pulling together the projections and budgets. Again, a pretty big effort by them and their staff. And of course, Lisa's leadership as we're working through the document and constantly being challenged and kind of working through trying to get our budgets and projections where they need to be for this ultimately first draft review tonight.
So, just wanted to quickly, before we get into it, go over our budget timeline. So, as I mentioned, a lot of time and effort goes into this budget document. Really starting in July is when we meet for the first time to go over our projections, projection worksheets, and ultimately our first draft budget worksheets. Staff then takes the time between July and October to go through and really have their first round and best guess projections and first round budgets from the July to October time frame. During that time, we're also, once we get to October, we're really evaluating the Fund 65 and 69 capital projects, department heads, and we present those to Lisa. And right around the November time frame is when we have a pretty good solid internal first draft. And so when we do have those numbers pulled together, Lisa and I kind of sit down and go through that, really looking for opportunities to gain additional efficiencies or cut costs where those opportunities might be available. And then in November and December, we'll really fine-tune the budget amounts, get a final first draft ready to go, really cutting off the amounts for projections and budgets by early January. Then we prepare the budget document for distribution by the end of January, which I believe they were distributed a few weeks back now. Gets us to this meeting now to go over the first draft. We'll be asking for the approval draft to be approved at the March 21st board meeting. Then the April board meeting will be when we approve the budget and appropriations ordinance, which needs to be filed with the county within 3 months of our the beginning of our fiscal year. So by the end of May, we need to submit the BAO to the county clerk. We typically do that shortly after the BAO ordinance approval, which again takes place in the April board meeting. So budget and appropriations here. Before we get into this, just want to give a quick refresher on the difference between budget and appropriation, if you hear those terms, sometimes used interchangeably. So the budget really represents what's a tool for us to use in our day-to-day management of the park district and used to ensure fiscal accountability. Whereas what the appropriation represents, that's what we're legally allowed to spend. So that's why we file that with the county. And if we do go beyond that appropriation, we certainly are able to do that, but it would require an additional process similar to the budget process where we have a public inspection and we need to ultimately submit that with the county clerk. So along those lines, it's really best practice to have the appropriation amount really exceed our budgeted amounts to give us that cushion for times that expenditures are going to exceed budget, because there's a lot of times that happens for very good reason. Here at the district, it happens often within the recreation programming. Obviously, a lot of that's contractually driven. Our revenue is going to keep pace, or our expenditures are going to keep pace with our revenue, so if we're doing more programming, taking in more revenue, those expenditures will exceed what we budgeted. So we always want to make sure we're giving ourselves plenty of cushion as it relates to the appropriation in the budget. So this year we're planning on appropriating around $26 million compared to $23.785 million in the prior year. And then, so that's an increase of about 10% on the appropriation side of things. As far as the budget goes, our total operating budget is looking at about a 5.52% increase in operating expenditures this year. That does include our debt service, so if we do pull out debt service, that number is a shade over 6%. Capital budget is increasing significantly this year, and that's mainly due to the completion of the large projects at Millen, Lakefront, Watts, and the Cripple, the three largest ones in our master plan capital. So the total operating revenue budget is projected to increase about 7% from the prior year budget. That's carried largely by our recreation programming. And actually, interest income has become very relevant in our operating budget again, which has not been the case for quite a while. If we exclude that interest income, the increase in revenue would be a little over 4.5%. As far as property taxes go, just a reminder, we approved the 2022 levy in November. 2022 is a reassessment year for the North Tri, so what comes with that is likely a very significant increase in our EAD. We're anticipating that. That will really just result in a reduction to our limiting rate, as EAD and limiting rate have an inverse relationship. Where it might come into play will be with the special recreation fund, as that's not really limited, that's just capped at 4 cents. So if we do have an increase in EAD, we will likely see a pretty large increase in our special recreation levy, which we did levy for and hope to capture and ultimately use that for the last renovation. Again, a significant increase in interest income this year. We're budgeting more than $400,000 additional in interest income than we did in the prior year. Next slide here provides just a high-level summary of our budgeted revenue and expenditures, along with transfers, and that's by department. I know there's a lot of numbers on this slide, and not the easiest to see here up here. So this is in your budget documents too, and we did print them on larger papers, the ones that fold out there. But really, what I want to do is just call your attention to the number here. This excess revenue over expenditures at $827,000 for our major operating funds. So what that represents is revenue over expenditures for our two major operating funds, the corporate fund, also commonly referred to as the general fund, and the recreation fund. It's important to remember, though, that $827,000 does not yet factor in our capital transfer that goes to Fund 65 annually. Traditionally, that that transfer has been $500,000. This year, we're budgeting that at $515,000 and an opportunity for driving capital costs and inflation. So at the end of the day, here's the right for our major operating funds. We're actually going to show a reduction of nearly $1.1 million. And the reason for that is it's really just planned capital transfer. So we have the transfer for $515,000 to Fund 65 for operating capital. And then we're also budgeting for a master plan capital project transfer of $1,400,000. So it's basically a planned transfer of existing fund balance to Fund 69 and fund future capital projects. The changes in our non-major operating funds, summarized right here, really most of them are actually showing a deficiency in revenue over expenditures, and that's, again, planned in an effort to really try to get the fund balance in those funds down to the 25% level. For most of those funds, the debt service is actually 15 to 25%. Speeding up fund balance, and we're projecting, we're budgeting for our ending fund balance to wind up at the end of fiscal year 24. That's kind of summarized on this slide. So again, a reminder, as it pertains to our fund balance policy, the major operating fund and corporate and recreation fund, we have a minimum fund balance policy of 50% of expenditures for both of those funds. The other operating funds are at 25% with the exception of debt service, which is 15 to 25%. So you can see here that we're projecting the major operating funds down with a fund balance of right around 60%, which is certainly a healthy number and in compliance with our fund balance policy. I alluded to the fact that we're budgeting for a $1,400,000 transfer out of the major operating fund. That breakdown is shown on this slide here. So for fiscal 24, we're budgeting for $850,000 to be transferred from the corporate or general fund and $550,000 to be transferred from the recreation fund, which gets us to our $1,400,000 master plan capital transfer. This slide also provides just some history in the past 10 years as to where that transfer has been. Obviously, COVID had a big impact on that $300,000 amount that you see a few years back. So we'll be actually requesting approval for the commitment of this fund balance at the February 21st board meeting, and then that'll ultimately then be presented in our audit, our fiscal 23 audit as committed fund balance for future capital.
Can you clarify that? On a GAAP, like an audited basis, that would show up, I don't know if they're calling it the corporate or the general fund, even though we're technically transferring it, it's going to show up as committed fund balance in the audit.
It'll show up as committed fund balance in the audit, and the transfer will ultimately take place in July when our audited numbers are
Okay. So technically it's committed until after the fiscal year and then the transfer. Okay, so it really is in another fund. It just doesn't, it's because it hasn't happened yet. Okay, got it.
Go back one slide, please. Say 2022 is that sort of outlier year, but 2021, we had 1.5. So 2018, 2021 were our big years for capital expenditures, transfers, and now we're doing going then back to normal for 2023.
Yeah, obviously the COVID year, the outlier there. But really, we are seeing it back in line with the least recent history in terms of capital transfer. As we kind of look at our overall challenges from a fiscal perspective, as we stand here with this fiscal 23-24 budget document, really three things to kind of point to, and they all might seem like kind of a broken record, but at least the first one might. And it's really just the labor shortage and the difficulty we're having in filling important positions here at the district, specifically in custodial positions, but most notably in Children's Circle. We still are struggling to get to the staffing levels that we need to run that program at 100% and really have the resources to run that program. Inflation and rising operating costs. So again, we're capped under PTEL, meaning we can only raise our property taxes 5%, no matter if it is if the actual change in CPI exceeds that 5%, which was the case last year and is ultimately the case in December of 2022, CPI was at 6.5%. So again, we're going to be capped at that 5%. So as our costs are rising, we're only able to increase our property taxes so much. And then all the risk that comes along with both managing significant capital projects, which we'll be doing this year, with WAS and Lakefront and the Crib Wall, and also balancing the need, from an operational perspective, with deferred maintenance needs and ultimately the desire for new amenities. Next slide here just shows our budgeted revenue by source. Not sure what happened with that orange piece there, but the big orange piece here represents property taxes. Blue here represents our program fees. Interest income is the third one here at 3%, the aqua color here. So really the thing to point out here is that our program fees are 51%. industry standards really would say 35% is a good number for program fees. So, you know, it shows that we're able to, you know, look at other sources of revenue to help support our operations and execute the programs that are desired from the community without as much of a burden on property taxpayers. Since rec programs are our biggest source of revenue here, I just wanted to break that down a little further by type, rec programs by category. And what you see here is that there's really nice diversification here between our programs. Those three large programs in the brown, blue, and purplish pink colors are about 28% here each. And the brownish color representing camps, purplish pink color is representing our preschool enrichments, and GJK revenue is also included in there. And then the blue is our youth program. So again, good to see that not only our rec programming is very strong, but it's also very, very well diversified here too. So we have various streams and sources of revenue.
GJK net or gross, isn't that 27%?
This is gross.
That's not. Yeah, it just goes right back to them, right? So it's not like they get 75% of that, right?
They get 75.
Right.
Which is pretty close to in line with a lot of our contractual programs. As far as our most popular art programs and what's really driving that, Kids Club is the number one. This is top programs in terms of excess revenue over expenditures in the past two fiscal years. So we see that Kids Club was number one for both years, some fund right behind that. And then Youth Ceramics came up to number three this year compared to four last year. And then Game On Camp for Girls is also a very popular program, and we're doing a lot with that also.
There's
Oceanic
Camp, right?
Yes. I'm sorry, which one?
So are you counting just recreation? You're not counting
Children's Circle is excluded from recreation programs, yes. Yeah.
Just curious,
where in the budget? That's a separate fund, yeah.
Yeah, we'll pull that out. Overall, Children's Circle is about $2 million in revenue, and we'll put down into that too.
And is
Game On
the same way? Do they get 75%?
Correct.
Yeah.
A few minutes here on our property tax levy, so again, we're capped under PTEL, but if we do remember back to November when we did approve the 2022 levy, while we did request an operational levy increase above that 5% to make sure we captured all the new growth, we were still able to actually decrease the amount of revenue that we're expecting from property taxes this year, and that's due to the abatement within the debt service fund. So again, while the operating levy did increase, but we're still looking to try to provide some relief to the residents in the form of that property tax abatement. So we see here we budgeted $6.174 million in fiscal 23 and budgeted $6.66 million in fiscal 24. And again, that's mainly because of the reduction for that one-time debt service abatement. Just a reminder of where the tax dollars go for Glencoe residents. Another graph to just kind of show that, and I know they're laying, it's a pretty small line here, but the big star there, the green piece of the pie, that's us. So we represent about 8% or eight times every dollar that a resident will pay in property taxes. So just to kind of put it in perspective and where we stack up against the school districts, New Jersey, that yellow number or yellow piece, and District 35 being the large orange piece there. In terms of our budgeted expenditures, so again, capital is a significant piece this year, represents about 40% of our total budgeted expenditures, followed up by personnel and contractual is our third highest number here.
And that one excludes 75%. Pass-through stuff, right? So your expenditures, you're including on the revenue side what you collect from GJK, but on the expenditure side, you're not including the pass-through to it.
This one included.
It does?
Yes.
So the contractual, so GJK is in the contractual side of that is?
Correct, $600,000.
Got it.
Yep.
No, more than that.
We We take in 800. Yeah, we keep about two of the 800 that we collect.
So on the other side, you've got 800. On this one, you've got 600. Okay. Yeah,
right.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay, that makes more sense.
So our budgeted master plan capital this year, obviously the lots renovation, very significant, $5.6 million. Lakefront is our second largest planned project for fiscal 24. Brick walls at $550,000. The gas kiln going into that very popular ceramics program. And then the remaining capital on design miscellaneous, fronted out at $175,000. Our Fund 65, our operating capital, is summarized here on this screen. And for the third year, the biggest expenditure here is the replacement of the air handler unit. This year, it's the multi-purpose wing that's being replaced. The next largest expenditure there is the sensory room and staff workspace that's being put in Children's Circle. Half of that project will be funded through the special recreation levy to account for the sensory aspect of the room. Wasp pickleball is another large expenditure, much needed, obviously, and desired by the community going in lots. Replacing a truck this year. Other capital includes a new Kubota. Our IT capital is in there. Some gym equipment upgrades also included in the other capital. Just to recap on our salary and wage scale, so we did discuss this at the December committee meeting, but we're budgeting for a 5% increase salaries for full-time staff. That equates to about $130,000 over last year. As we look at our seasonal part-time positions, we are dealing with another increase in minimum wage up to $13 an hour, which equates to about 8%, ultimately resulting in compression down to those levels. Just wanted to kind of talk about our fund listing here, if you do get into some of the GL detail or some of the documents in the budget details. So, again, this is just a summary of all of our funds. The corporate fund includes the administrative corporate administration, G&A, which is just an in and out. G&A take general and administrative, spends the money, and then charges the other departments for it to net out to zero. Parks is in 1012, so Parks is in the corporate fund. Watts, Beach, and Boating are all departments within the corporate fund. Then the recreation fund, we have take it admin, the recreation programs themselves, Children's Circle is in the recreation program, fitness is in the recreation fund. Then we have a bond and interest fund, our capital project funds, as I alluded to, 65 and 69, 65 being operating, 69 master plan capital. 67, if you do see that, that's our bond proceeds from 2020. We're budgeting to spend those down this fiscal year on our capital projects. That's going to be the first money out as we're paying down Watts. There's a three-year temporary period that attaches to those bonds, and that expires in September. So we want to get that spent as quickly as possible. And then our other non-major funds, won't get into too much detail there, but our GL definition, if you're looking at account numbers and kind of wondering what each set of numbers represents, so the first set of numbers is the fund. So again, fund 10 is the corporate or general fund, 25 is the recreation fund. Next set of numbers is the department. The number after that is the program, which will really only be applicable for the rec programming that we do in fund 25. And then the last number there, the fourth series of numbers, is the whether it's a revenue or expense, that's the account number. And 4,000 series represents revenue, 5,000 series representing expenditures. And just a quick summary of what a typical budget detail is going to look like here. So again, we'll have the fund listed out, the department program, and then account category. And the budget document tonight has the first draft here in the column all the way to the right. Once we get to the approval draft, we'll have another column there so you can compare the first draft to the approval draft. I'm going to spend a little time on some of the larger departments or funds and kind of talk through some of the variances or the cause for some of the variances from one year to the next. So really going to focus on these columns here to the right. First of which is the corporate administration fund. So tax receipts are actually going up significantly in this fund, and a lot of that has to do with just a rebalance of the property tax levy. during COVID, we shifted a lot of the, more of the levy, I should say, to the recreation fund as we were anticipating less in terms of program revenue. Safe to say that, you know, fingers crossed that that's beyond us, and so we're looking to kind of rebalance that. So when we get to the take-if admin, you'll see a reduction in the property taxes for the recreation fund. Mentioned interest income. So in this fund alone, we're budgeting for $140,000 compared to $500 last year. So we've been obviously one great byproduct of the rising cost and inflation is the increase in the interest rates on money here at the bank. Fed increased rates actually last week, another 0.25%. March meeting, they're anticipating another increase. So we might ratchet that number up a bit as we get into the approval draft, trying to be as realistic as we can with the just being careful in that there could potentially be decreases at the end of this year, so obviously nobody has that crystal ball. But we don't want to be too aggressive with that interest income, and we don't really want to come to rely upon it in our operating budget either. It's really something we want to view as, you know, a one-time thing. I doubt we'll get back to the $500 level anytime soon, but it's not realistic either to anticipate we'll sustain this level for multiple years.
The cash or CDs that you guys are constantly going over?
CDs. So there's CDs. There's U.S. Treasuries. Ultimately, Brian and I work pretty diligently to make sure that we're keeping whatever minimum amount we need in our operating account. We're obviously limited by statute, but we're able to invest in Illinois funds. There's a pretty significant piece in Illinois funds, so we try to diversify between different institutions, but it's very conservative, as you would expect, and we just do our best to try to maximize that. I think the largest paying CD we have right now is right at 5%, though, which is pretty good to see.
The change here on our $192,000 for fund transfer out, that's just the reduction in that master plan capital transfer that I had mentioned last year out of the corporate fund, that was $1,050,000. This year is $850,000.
As we look at general administration, so again, this just accounts for the administrative structure of the district. So it's an in and out. That's why we see this zero down here at the bottom. That being said, expenditures did increase significantly with the G&A department this year. Really driven, so about an 8.86% increase here in salaries, so 5% merit pool, with an administrative support specialist position that was added to help support front desk operation and ultimately take on some responsibilities as it relates to donations, park permits, which we'll kind of see the impact of that in those other funds.
The contractual line item here increased. This is where we're planning on funding or paying for the comprehensive plan this year. So we're expecting, obviously, you know, once in every 10-year expense that we're going to account for here in the general and administrative department, and then obviously gets charged back to the departments. And then insurance is always, this is employee health insurance. The number is very sensitive to changes in coverage for our employees, and ultimately resulted in an increase this year of about $70,000.
So we get into parks. We'll see here, I mentioned that administrative support specialist. So we see salaries in the parks department is going up about $17,000. And that includes an additional position for mowing, but really was able to offset against some part-time wages that were being for tasks that are now being completed by that administrative support specialist. And with that additional mower, we're able to save significantly and really net a gain here. As it relates to our contract with Molu, we're planning for a pretty significant reduction from $315,000 in contractual to $253,000 in our fiscal 24 budget. So achieving significant cost savings in the contract and really getting the benefit of the full-time focus on mowing for that season, and then an additional resource for custodial or whatever other facility maintenance type tasks are required during off-season months.
And then the fixed charges, so this is going to start to sound like a broken record, but this represents the payment to the general and administrative department. So as I get into each of these, you're going to see that fixed charges has increased, and that's because those general and administrative expenses had increased too. So that's what that $95,000 increase represents. And a little hard to see here, but the TACIF admin department, we talked about the decrease here now in property taxes for the balance of the levy post-COVID. We talked about the increase in interest income. Again, the corporate and recreation fund get an even split on that interest income, so that's the same number that you saw in the corporate admin department. And then as we get into some of the expenses here, we'll see that utilities actually had a spike in expenses and later other matter item that we'll be discussing. So this budget is put together, again, beginning of January is our cutoff, and so we're operating off of best estimates on where we think the electricity costs might be. Ultimately, we're looking like that's going to trend lower based on what we're going to present in other matters. So we're hoping to be able to adjust that line item down for the approval draft to get a more precise number for the fiscal 24 budget. The contractual expense here in TACIF admin also increased. So we had about a 9% increase in our maintenance service agreement. So our elevator, Midwest Mechanical, which handles our HVAC, fire alarm, stuff like that to maintain the operations here within TACIF. Overall, about a 9% increase with that contractual line item. With Erin being out, we do have her soon to be out. We will have an additional contractual expense for a freelance marketing person to help with pick up those tasks in Erin's absence. So another item there. Also, an increase in credit card processing fees in line with revenue.
Percentage-wise,
or pretty close. The other aspect there is we're looking at a change in our payment processor. We really need to do it, and there might be some capital involved there. There's going to be some upfront training, so we're accounting for that initial investment there, but ultimately looking to get into a better solution for the district as a whole, and the really major thing and what we're really focused on is trying to get folks into ACH and ultimately.
It's a big question for ACH these days. Yeah. That'd be nice.
Yeah, so that's what we're really
and backup.
Quick question, John. Just
yeah.
I did notice that the credit card service fees went from 105 to 165, which could be related to lots of things. But the credit card service fees seem to have jumped a lot.
The credit card service fees we pay.
Oh, I think 105 in 2021, which could be connected to just the level of service we have, to 165 as an estimate for 23, 24. We don't charge anyone a fee for using credit card. Okay, so that's, of course, that makes sense. ACH, yeah.
Yeah. Currently.
And if we got into the ACH model, that's when, you know, we'll really...
So if we could do that, then we don't have to deal with this. Yeah.
But we yeah. Still have, I think we still have some of this. We still have less of it.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't have to pay a fee, I charge it.
Right.
I mean, the ACH model is a little bit different than
dollar per transaction.
Right, than charging you the 2% credit card fee.
Right, right. Yeah.
Fund transfer out. This fund handles the lion's share of the GMA activity, so a big increase there in the fund transfer out, the fund and the general administrative increase for fiscal 24. We'll just mention some of the other smaller departments within each of these funds. So Watts, Beach, Foley, Children's Circle, and Fitness. And this is just a comparison of our budgeted or of our excess revenue over expenditures for fiscal 23 budget, fiscal 23 projections, and fiscal 24 budget. So ultimately, with Watts, what we're seeing is a decrease in revenue again. Both at the beach and Watts, we're anticipating decreases in revenue. We really have that bounce from COVID, and we're just getting back to more what will likely be more typical and levels in future years. So some reductions in revenue. Watts revenue down about $37,000.
beach revenue is about $21K. Watch expenses include the compressor rebuild of about $15,000. Maintenance service agreement increases of about $8,000, so we're adding the elevator at Watts as part of the renovation that would be part of that maintenance. Beach boating department, again, the decrease of $21,000 in revenue, just to be a little more realistic in what we can expect post-COVID. G&A increase of about $23,000. And then this one's really, again, last year we had the charge for health insurance to this department. It was a person who opted for the buyout, which is great for us, but this year we've had a change and now we have family coverage for insurance in this fund. So about a $27,000 increase to the beach expenditure budget as a result of that. And Children's Circle, we see here pretty big fluctuation from fiscal 23 budget projection, and ultimately we are still budgeting to have an excess of revenue over expenditures only by about $8,000. The main thing driving that is that if you'll recall back in the fall, beginning of the fall, we had talked about adding the additional full-time positions, 9 of them for full-time assistant teachers. And we did along with that came the health insurance costs for those individuals. As grade 7 employees, they're entitled to heavily subsidized individual and individual plus child coverage. So that's now worked into the budget. But it is good to see that we are still showing an excess of revenue over expenditures.
Okay. And then fitness right around grade, and not a whole lot to speak to on that one.
So a quick slide here on the Special Recreation Fund. So I think I mentioned the sensory room is being paid out of capital here for $75,000. And then there's an additional capital budget for $500,000, which represents capital project, special recreation, ADA-related capital that's going to be related to the last project, so primarily the elevator. It's going to be charged out of the special recreation fund up to the extent of the $500,000 that we have budgeted.
This is kind of summarizing the other non-major funds. There's really not a whole lot to speak to on these unless there's specific questions. Again, we're just monitoring the budget of ending fund balance, and just trying to make sure we're right around that 25% threshold. We have increased the expenditure budget and levy in the risk management fund just to fund some important safety initiatives that we have on the docket. Radio amplifiers for public safety is one of the major ones, a major expense for next year, but again, important as all the safety initiatives are. With that, I'll pause, and if there's any particular questions, I'd be happy to address them.
I think I had one. It was about related to this year's budget, but you had the forecast in there, and they were planned. It looked like planned expenditures exceeding revenues in outer years. Is it a planned drawdown? Is that the same thing as the committed fund balance, or is that for a different project? I'm trying to find the page now. It was out. Five-year budget projections. It was in 27 and 28. And there was a net surplus / deficit, and there were deficits in 27 and 28, and I realize this is a forecast and it's not real.
Yeah.
But I thought I read in the summary, like the write-up about it, that there was that was planned. And I guess it was a little bit didn't really understand.
Yeah,
am I just misinterpreting that?
Let me pull that up.
I think, you know, a lot of times I think one of the discussions we've had, right, when it comes to like pay increases, can we afford this project, is like, well, is this going to put us into, you know, a situation farther down the line.
Right.
And so I'm trying to understand you know, the decisions that we're making today. Obviously, this is not super grand. Like, lots of things can happen.
Yes.
But, like, is this something that's naturally occurring because of natural expenditure growth and typical revenue growth, or is this something that's purposeful? Are there line items here that are purposely contributing?
So, yeah, nothing is purposeful here. And really the intent here is to show the path we're going down with, as you alluded to, very, very basic assumptions. It's not, you know, we're not getting granular here, but we are providing, you know, inserting basic assumptions here. What this represents down here is if we plan to fund the deferred capital, a lot of the deferred capital that we have, and most notably the maintenance center, which we penciled in for fiscal 28, you know, this is where we would be without additional funding.
Okay, so we're expecting a referendum for that.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
But even factoring out the capital here, but we will notice that we still be in a deficit position in fiscal 28, which is something to keep in mind, because as we put this projection together, this line item up here represents our property taxes, and we did assume a 5% increase for fiscal 25, which would be our next levy. So even if we go 5% next year, if we're capped under FITEL, and then we back it off to about 3%, I think, in future years, you know, we still could potentially be running at a deficit in fiscal 28.
And what do you think the main driver is? That salary expenses, or is it capital, or both?
Well, capital is obviously a major one, but if we remove the capital discussion, we're hovering around break-even-ish. But I think a main driver is, again, we're looking at 6.5% CPI, we're looking at 9% increase in our maintenance service contracts, and we only have a 5% increase in property taxes. Regular programming has really been a saving grace, and it is able to, you know, help us and keep pace with those expenditures, but you know, at the end of the day, it's ultimately going to catch up to us if we have one outpace the other.
And we have minimum wage, which we've talked about for a number of years, headed to $15. Whether or not there's something we can do about that, so we're going to continue to see that until it takes it.
Rising staff costs, and then when minimum wage rises, everything else has to rise. We're seeing that already. So.
Interesting.
But still, like, everything is an increase off of a bigger increase. And if inflation is coming down in some ways, if it's down for 2023 below 5%, we won't be able to capture that in the levy, right?
We have the maximum
CPI. So potentially you could see the mismatch for
Unless it's new construction, right? New construction you can grab, but
we have very little. We'll have Hoover Estate would be the only one.
The state says Hoover Estate.
Yeah.
Exactly.
New construction includes remodeling and permitting. It's not
teardowns and
only teardowns.
Correct.
So
I don't think
just permitting for.
I don't believe new construction is remodeling.
I've always been under the assumption it's teardowns too, but I couldn't get.
Teardowns, yes, but not, I don't like.
It's only, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Because
not remodeling your.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we've had a few of those, not much.
I think, that's something we need to be conscious of, because it seems like we've had the right confidence factors, right? Budgeting for higher expenses and then not having the staff or savings or weird COVID things, and those kind of upside might go away and we don't have those one time revenues to spend out.
Correct.
Okay.
So John, if I remember correctly, there's an increase in 5% for salaries and wages, is that correct? Is that actually the number we work with, or if we're understaffed, will that actually create an opportunity for, on average, a larger than 5% increase?
Yeah, I don't think it'll result in a larger than 5% increase. It's going to result in what we're seeing in, you know, our projections in fiscal 23 in Children's Circle, $375,000 excess of revenue over expenditures. So it's money that we can ultimately, it's going to roll into our fund balance and ultimately into Fund 69, but, you know, at the expense of unfilled positions.
And at some point, it's not sustainable into the future. So eventually, what we'll have to do is cut programs. Mm-hmm. We can't, mm-hmm. if we don't have staff, we can't continue to have people work 60 hours or whatever. So eventually, it's going to come to, we can maintain it for a short term. We're almost at that breaking point now. And so I would, that's not a good thing to depend on lower staffing.
Yeah, this weekend I was shocked. I was in the car and listening to the radio, and the ad came on first.
Yep, we're trying everything, man. Okay, I'm glad you heard the ad. We're trying everything.
Good.
I knew exactly what we're doing.
We are, and that hits Lake County, that area.
It's like, okay,
so
you're doing everything. If it gets on the, that's what we thought.
It is, but I was like,
I actually think maybe we should even have a bigger sign. A bigger, like, great big sign.
I don't think the sign.
You don't think a bigger sign?
No, the signs are there for. Those aren't drawing people from this community. It's
but they may be coming here for other reasons.
Yeah, I think the sign size is.
Yeah.
By the way, we're capped by how big we can put a sign up because the village ordinance, anyways.
The village,
but yeah.
Village signs are.
We're not going to go there.
We're capped on the signs, but they can put those wayward signs.
On a positive note, we did have a full-time hire in Children's Circle this week. She accepted, which is great. But we were also reminded in that process of, you know, what the market really demands and demands will result in.
You attract it, and then, you know, it might have the domino effect the other way. So.
Oh, boy.
And we also hired custodians this week, too, so we're making some headway.
That's good.
Let's hope it's not two steps back.
Yes.
So.
And I would guess in the outside of Children's Circle, if you have a departure in administration, you never know if the person coming in, like what they're going to get paid, and that could alter the budget or the
insurance
that they select and everything. So
we have some, for the insurance, we have buffers in there because you can't guarantee throughout the year that there won't be a life change.
Yeah, yeah.
So we keep that, there's a buffer in there for insurance changes, but but yes, the staffing. Yeah.
I pay attention to inflation for my work, and it seems like there's a consensus that we're not going to return to the same period of low inflation.
Right.
And that, just given the dynamics of the post-COVID environment, aging demographic, labor market, shrinking workforce participation.
True.
Yeah, and obviously the Fed chair spoke today and did say that he expects some significant decrease in inflation this year, which the markets I know responded, but it's to be seen. Let's see. And, you know, rates were held so artificially low for so long. We'll see how, what the new normal is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Well, I would like to say thank you to the team because they did a wonderful job. It looks really easy when we presented you, but it's a lot of work and a lot of back and forth and managing a very, we run on a very fine line. We don't overinflate. What I always say is that no one gets a gold star if they outperform their budget or expend less. We would look for a 90% budget. We look for a really accurate budget so we can do proper planning. So that's when you get a gold star, is if you're 95% within budget. There'll always be outliers like pickleball and go crazy, but, you know, for the most part, that's how we operate.
Very good presentation and a really good packet. It was long but reasonable. So
great,
I appreciate
great presentation.
Lisa actually did ask me to.
There's even more.
Yes,
like,
you know,
can we take
the attention span of the commission?
Take a few slides out.
You told me you wouldn't be all that interested in the
$12,000 audit fund this time.
But you know what I did see? I saw a budget amount for iPads for staff, makes total sense, and board, and I'm thinking, we could probably save you guys $1,000 and just say, don't get us iPads.
Well, I always put it in there every year just in case someone doesn't want to use their own personal device. And if you don't use them, actually, they do go into children's circle.
Oh, they go. Good.
I
yeah.
use my iPad because I can't figure out my damn password for the Glencoe Park District. The only one that has phone. So I just take it and I
look
at the address and then
I
look at it.
But then what do you think? Much of a confiscate your work email
they could.
For public.
Yeah.
I think Schwab was freaked
out. Yeah, I'm not that concerned.
Maybe John can help you find your password.
I know.
I did see that. I did see that one yesterday. I'm like, oh okay.
My God, I couldn't use Teams in the office.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, that
true.
Is a problem. Right?
That is true. So,
yeah.
I'll remember that in the future to do Zoom or something.
Yeah, that is right. Yeah, they do. They do. Okay.
Prohibited to use your work device for anything else.
You did?
I opened two emails that I guess were like, and they send us up to do it as a test, and I failed.
Oh, the phishing?
Twice.
Twice.
Phishing scams?
Yeah. I saw one today, this week too. It was really weird. I'm sure I failed.
Phishing scams the best.
They like to do that too.
Okay, does the committee have any questions prior to advancing the fiscal year 2023-24 budget? First draft for approval at the March 21st board meeting?
I do have one concern, but I don't know if it's to be addressed now, and so Lisa Shepherd, I'll ask you.
Okay.
Are we... if we advance this budget, are we advancing the 5% merit as well, or is that a separate conversation?
You already actually approved the 5% merit a couple months ago, so yes, that is has already amended, because that's why we have discussions so much earlier.
I don't have a problem with the 5% merit. Yeah. What I do have an issue with, I don't know if it should be addressed now or later, is I am struggling a little bit with Children's Circle, and I know that we are investing in Children's Circle. I'm trying to figure out what the justification is for a 4% increase in rates when every other expense is going up, up the wazoo, including labor, now at least 5%, if not more. Why don't we put that into the rates for Children's Circle?
I think that is our plan, but it was kind of, it was clear from the board that they wanted to make those adjustments slowly. So our plan is to slowly approach that. So not do a big jump in 1 year, but slowly build those up to meet demand.
I think you could probably do that. I'd like to hear what the other board members think. I think if we're putting salaries at 5% and we're talking about all these expenses, I'm struggling with, like, and I know some of the $375,000 from last year was because of vacancies, but I'm struggling with the going from 375% good guy to like effectively flat and not raising the rates in line with, it's not raised for inflation, it's not raised for salary. So I'm trying to figure out why we would do a 4% when
Bobby, do you have anything to add?
5%, we're giving 5% raises, so I'm going to push that one with you.
Yeah, you know, it's a valid point. I think we're hearing from parents that they're really struggling when you're paying your two children paying $5,000 a month. A 5-6% increase is making it that people are leaving the workforce. So I think we look to the board whether they would want to continue to support families and make that incremental change.
Oh, don't put it that way. It's well, not that. That's a reporting
now. Well, you know what? Let's put it this way: the Watts and Boating don't meet their expenses.
But
child care meets their expenses, exceeds their expenses, and money gets pushed away. So I would say we are committed to them meeting their expenses. We're not committed to them contributing to other funds. I mean, at the bare minimum. So I think, Michael, actually is the way I justify that dilemma.
So we're meeting all the direct expenses and a good portion of the indirect expenses. We're just not, because we changed a policy a couple months ago to not cover all the direct and indirect. So they're still covering a good portion of that, but the board had this discussion a couple months ago and just chose to change the policy to that effect. So that's how we budgeted based on that discussion.
So I don't mind the 5% salary increase. I think if that's what we agreed upon, I do remember these conversations and inflation's going up. I just struggle with why, it looks, we want to increase voting and others by only 4%, then your argument's okay, but I don't know why.
I don't think that's.
I guess I don't.
I think voting is an option and child care is a necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And voting has been in a deficit for, I mean, poor voting. I love voting. Forgive me, voters.
Zero. Like, if that's the argument, child care is
a voting has been in a deficit for decades.
Well, I'm in all seriousness, go to zero. If families are having a hard time, go to zero.
But this goes back to the whole reason why I keep saying why we keep throwing money at our salaries when and we still are not attracting staff and we're still low. And that's why I keep saying at some point you have to just stop throwing money at it and level out because we cannot increase our program rates 100%. You know, so that's why I keep fighting back against that.
Yeah, I mean, I know we talked about the 5%. I am struggling with. I know child care is important. I sent my 3 years to child care, and trust me, I am spending significant amounts of money on camps, which the prices are going up a lot more than 5%. And I need camp, right? I mean, I worked with this summer, but I think. The argument of a child care being a necessity, then we should really subsidize it and not do 4%. The 4% number had to come from somewhere, and I'm trying to figure out what the justification is.
It's not
CPI, it's not our expenditures and salary.
Well, yeah, we looked at what our expenses were and the subsidy that we would have, so the amount of indirect expenses that they were going to pay for, and we made that decision to make 4%. Next year we'll do it again and keep moving up slowly so it's not such a big gap until we kind of close that gap. But
we budget based on categories of service, so the board approves those categories of service. So CAMP has that 30% plus that margin that we've used. So again, it gets back to the board's philosophy on the program and how much you want to subsidize it or not subsidize it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show you guys, Sun Fun, Camp Adventure,
Bob,
Action Press are all about 5 to 10%. I just want to be consistent and have a good
The reason is, as Bobby indicated, we go with our category of service. So direction of staff is to make sure we keep that net that's required that the board passed of those categories. And I think camp is also, the fee is not as large as Children's Circle. The amount of staffing, right? It's substantially less. So, thank you. So this is the category of service, so this is what we base on that. So the only difference is that the private category switched a little bit based on the policy change. But other than that, we look at those categories of service when we set our fees, and we look to at least have the same net as we did the prior year. So you have to also remember camp is going up, camp expenses are going up substantially, actually more than Children's Circles, between minimum wage increase, busing, field trips, all those are making giant leaps like of 8 and 9%. So it's more than just the 5%. Hence why the day camp is a little stronger.
Some programs are always, 0%?
Some did have 0. Yep,
yeah. Again, we're using the board's philosophy here for categories of service, so that's the number one thing we look at when it comes to programming, is we do a pro forma of what this looks like, what the net margin on the program is, does it fit into that category of service? If not, what do we need to do to adjust it? Can we pull out additional expenses? What's the labor market looking like? For some funding camp venture, the labor increase is 8% because of minimum wage, because that's pushed everybody off, but Children's Circle's got a 5%. Increase in labor cost.
I thought we just
in addition to the market adjustments.
But I think the market adjustments are probably pushing over 8%. I just think I think we are somewhat inconsistent. And to me, I would feel slightly more comfortable if we just pushed it up 1% so it's in line with the other expenses. I totally agree with you. It is a necessity. I would argue so are summer camps. But if we're using busing is more expensive for summer camps, or maybe it's more expensive for summer camps, but it's not for Children's Circle, I struggle with that. I really do.
I mean, I just have a problem that the children's circle, first of all, it is basically an enrichment and preschool and all of these other services combined. It's just a longer program.
Yeah.
And why do we place less value in terms of the public support on a necessity than what's, for some people, not a necessity? I think it's a little bit odd. I get it, its own category.
Yeah.
Because a day off program in daycare, kids club, kids daycare, like I
campus daycare,
daycare.
Campus going up 70%.
So yeah, the children's circle has it's a full day preschool.
So in terms of how we classify how we budget, children's circle has a more rounded indirect expense in the actual budget. Those recreation programs, like school day off, they don't pay any contribution towards building overheads. They don't pay any of those additional expenses. So it's a little deceptive for the 30%. We're not actually making that. They don't pay for the air conditioning, a lot of electricity.
Mm-hmm. Right. The 30% net is actually to cover the indirect expenses. So that's what it is. So it is deceiving. So they're not making a 30% profit. They're paying that 30%. None of our programs make a profit. They're paying that into the infrastructure, the indirect expenses associated with that. As far as daycare, I believe, and this is way before my time when they started Children's Circle, it was looked at as something that was unusual for park districts to do. There's probably only a handful of park districts throughout the state that do full daycare. So it was looked as more than a recreation program. So at that time, they decided this could not be subsidized fully by the taxpayers. That was the philosophy. Now, it's obviously, the board just changed that philosophy to say it doesn't have to cover all of its indirect expenses anymore. So it's actually moving back into, if we change that, it's actually back into the extra public now. So that's where, and we haven't moved it. This is the old chart. We haven't moved it since the board took the action. That actually is going into extra public, and it has a net to cover a little bit more than CAMP does. Because they use a lot more services, the custodian, the air, throughout the year, the everything, the playground, they're using a lot more than day camp is through a year-round basis.
I would say there's a private market failure when it comes to daycare.
So, I agree.
Right. So,
like, I don't think it's
I mean, that whole concept is like.
There's
an absolute private market failure. But we can't solve America's issues with that. My challenge with it is that we are using the arguments of expenses are going up with some programs and not with others, and we're not pushing that onto the people who use it. And we are at like 8,000 surplus, which is lower than we've ever been before. All you need is something to break at 10,000 and now you're negative. I'm not saying that 1% increase in rates is going to compensate that for us, but the optics behind, hey look, you know, everything's going up, salaries are going up much more than 5%, and they should go up much more than 5%. I think that should be passed on to those who can afford it. Those who cannot afford it have absolute options with FSG, to the best of my knowledge, to get scholarships.
Not for Children's Circle.
Not for Children's Circle.
For other programs?
So there's a program, you do a scholarship fund, but not all programs are eligible from New York City Land for residents.
And Children's Circle is not eligible for that.
Correct, based on the board's philosophy from.
And I'm sure the threshold for that, we're talking about basic.
Actually, the threshold would be very low. No one in our program now would apply.
No one in the program now would fall.
Totally agree, but like,
so.
But my point is, I don't know, I feel like it's worthy of discussion. If I'm the only one that wants to vote against it, I'm fine with that, but I just don't, the arguments of why that's 4%, not 5%, while all of the camps are 6-8%, while days off are 6-8%, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's a bigger expense, so 4% of an increase is a bigger number to pay, shell out.
Then make it zero. I mean, why are you not making it zero, if that's the argument? Like, it's a need. I don't
understand. What she's saying is that, so the day camp and days off, they're having a bigger spike in salaries for minimum wage and busing services, because camps use a lot more busing service. Those went up like, what, 9-10%?
Yeah,
contractuals that come in for day camp that people are all expecting, those are all rising way higher than the 5%. So that's why we think that day camp should go up that high to cover all those indirect expenses.
But we have to prove special food budgets. Everything's going up, Lisa. I don't buy it. So that's going up more for camp than it is for total service. I just don't buy it.
Okay.
We don't have any evidence to prove. Actually, everything to the contrary has been said. We are now subsidizing this because labor is so expensive and catastrophically expensive. We've got a new food vendor and a new food contract that is going up higher than before.
No, it's actually the same.
No, not from a year and a half ago. We had a meeting 2 years ago.
From a year ago to this time, it went up,
I am concerned that you are cutting the margins so thin on that one. And don't get me wrong, again, I love the fact we have a daycare center. I think it's phenomenal. I just don't get the optics of it.
But if you look at, I mean, every program is different. Dance and theater, I'm very thankful to see that that's not coming up because it's so expensive. And so that's at 0%, which is great. That's phenomenal. You know, so we're kind of all over the board.
Yeah, we are.
And
there isn't a consistency because there can't be.
Because it's based on so many different factors.
Yes.
Right. But,
yes.
But the fact of the matter is, if that's the case, your children's circle is going from the, is having the biggest decrease in margin of any other program out there. Right, the margins are going down.
Because for them, it's around 7%, that margin.
So you're going to zero.
Yeah, but you have to look at how has it increased over the years. You're only looking at this.
No, I'm looking at the past 2 years. We've always had six-figure plus surplus, and now we're going down to zero. So maybe I'm looking at this from a different lens. I realize I'm looking at it from a...
I see what you're saying.
It's going to zero, guys. I mean, like, it's on there on the page. It is effectively going $8,000 over $2 million in revenue.
It is based on the change the board made from not covering all the direct and indirect. So, I mean, it's really your tolerance of how much we can raise that. Our plan was to slowly raise it.
Yeah.
So next year, it'll be, if other ones are only three, if Children's Circle will be keep on going up until it meets a better net margin. We just didn't think we could do it all at once.
Because
that 4% is a big dollar figure for the tuition they pay.
I'm not asking to be done all at once. I'm trying to understand justification for 4%. And so far, and I realize it'd be a pain in the butt, and I'm okay with that.
Bobby, do you have any other additions?
I haven't heard it.
Then we can...
Not other than the philosophy we've already talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the expenses for Children's Circle have probably gone up higher than anything else. Your margins are going down further than anything else.
They have gone up. We totally say that.
The viability of the program, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. It's
right.
Very much a fractured market, as Commissioner Spang said.
Yeah.
Viability, I just watched a 20-minute podcast from NPR about the affordability of child care.
It's horrible.
And how it's impacting women in the workforce.
Actually, women in the workforce,
yeah.
And that's the thing. It's who's gonna hurt the most in this whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
So
that is an irrelevant argument because I agree with you. It hurts women in the workforce. It is a horrible thing that America does not fund daycares. Totally agree with you. Totally on board. If that's the case, if that's the argument that we're doing this for women in America,
it's not the argument.
0%.
That's not the argument. There's not just one thing that you can look at. You have to look at what people can afford.
If we think that wages are going to 5% systematically, and we think that inflation is going up, and this program is, we're going to have to raise rates at some point. I'm just saying, that's it.
I think it's up to the board, I guess, to go around and ask what people want us to do because we need direction.
Well, the 1% isn't going to do anything for this year.
No.
So if it brings it up to 11,000 or whatever,
yeah.
It's going to be what Bobby said. Like, what's going to happen in future years? Is it going to be viable? If at the end of this year we're like, we have a deficit of 100,000, you know we're in trouble.
Yeah,
I agree.
We might have discussion whether to have that program. If we can't hire staff, we might have discussion, do we want to keep this program in?
No, I understand what you're saying.
The 1% will not do it.
The 1% is not going to solve it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We know that if we have a huge deficit, we're in trouble.
So how we approach it, right, is if we were fully staffed this year. We know that's not realistic, but what we have to make sure is we understand the true operation cost of this program is, because if we do get fully staffed in 2 years, then we realize, whoa, we're in a huge deficit, we can't be in that position. So we took the approach of we need to understand what it costs to run this program, And if we're fully staffed, which we know we're not, but we need
that's
to
a very good point.
Yeah. Base the price on
mm-hmm.
that, because
mm-hmm. that's right.
We don't want the board finding out 2 or 3 years we're at $300,000-$400,000 deficit,
right.
which
mm-hmm.
could easily happen if we're not careful.
Yeah, so this is a budget fully staffed, so
right.
we anticipate that margin will be a little bit bigger. So
the other thing about the 5% is the other point is because of the staff turnover is so high and hard, staff are not making that merit increase. So
mm-hmm.
they turn over, we're not, you know, there is wage increase from
mm-hmm.
the pressures, but a lot of the times it's because the staff turn up so quick, they're not getting merit increases.
Right.
So really it's the full-time staff are getting it, the part-time staff are not. So it's
mm-hmm.
resetting back down to that wage.
The beginning wage.
Then,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
then it does not sound like we're going for that 95% budget, right? Because if your salary expects are 1.5, but you don't think you're going to hit it, then you're probably closer to 1.3, and that makes you feel a little bit more comfortable, but that's kind of
I think
different than what
it is. It's a
non-stop
fraction market. It,
yeah.
it keeps me up at night, and it's
yeah.
a lot of people.
Of course it does.
So,
a lot of people.
Yeah.
I
think a lot of it is out of our control, unfortunately.
No, I
yep.
know. I know. And I, again, I love that we have it. This is not a philosophic debate on America's reluctance to invest where we should invest. It is the office and the budget. It's
well,
not.
It
all right. So, does anybody
yeah.
else? Do we? Do you want
to? Yeah. I. Yeah.
Anybody else want to raise it to 5%?
No.
Bart? Carol? Lisa? Okay. We'll keep it there. Good discussion, though. Anything else? No? Okay.
Okay. So we will advance it. And
okay.
moving on to our discussion on district stipend requests. Lisa, would you please present the information for us?
Sure. We have two... nonprofit groups requesting stipend from the Park District. One is Clinical Youth Services, and I put the description in your
mm-hmm.
your packet, you know that, and one is GGHP.
Mm-hmm.
Description's also in your packets. Last year, I believe we gave them both $5,000,
mm-hmm.
And they're requesting each, well, $10,000 each, and then GYS SNAP program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up for the board to decide what they would like to give.
I have a question. Why does New Trier Township and the village generally give away money like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of odd to me. I usually thought like grants to not-for-profits came from the state or federal government versus local government. I'm very confused.
Yeah, New Trier Township does do grants for programs.
Okay.
I have not seen it in other villages, but Village of Glencoe has historically given for quite a few community not-for-profit groups. Out of, I don't know which fund, but
yeah.
And I would hope that we would move towards more of a model that I think we are moving towards, which is donations in kind. I think the concept of collecting tax revenue and then choosing to donate it to nonprofits is I think that should be at the discretion of individual residents rather than the district taking the money and then donating it. What I did notice is GJHP has a very healthy balance. They have quite a healthy balance and always have had. So I'm just uncomfortable with the level of request, but also that all of our affiliates, all of our community partners do provide activities and services that align with our mandate. So that doesn't, they're not unique in that sense, and I think they have a good fundraising capabilities that's proven in their fund balance, and I think that our donation in kind is a better way to approach it.
Yeah, I mean, GGHP charges for other events, I know, because I'm super.
yeah.
They are getting money. I know about it, usually we compete with the play, and we do.
Yeah.
Our program competes with that directly.
Yeah.
And that program's very popular, so.
And our theater program's in the extra public, so they have to net like 30%. So.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I really,
I love both these programs, and I know they do a lot of good, and they're very popular, so that's a hard thing for me, but I do hear what you're saying. They do support themselves, and they send around a lot of donation letters, and I know they get them, because people mm-hmm. do it, you know, personally to their group of friends. So, I can see the argument against it. It's taken me 6 years.
I know. Oh, Stephanie. We've exchanged roles here. Does anyone else? And you know, the other thing is, I didn't see it. I'm sure I just missed it. Does District 35 contribute? Because
So that changed with GGHP this year. So District 35 now fully funds and hires the staff for the in-house school program. That did not used to be the case.
Oh, so they're also covering.
Now they're covering the in-house. They are not covering the expenses of the after-school program, which aligns to our mission. I don't believe they charge for that one. So for the GGHP, the after-school program.
I don't know about that.
It's not a super high.
But they charge for attendance. Event.
Yes. Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts on either of these?
I mean, also, we would have to make that clear because we've contributed for, I don't know how many years, a lot.
Oh, a long time, yeah.
At least as long as you and I go from the board.
Yeah.
Oh, way before, I was
before
here.
That.
Yeah, way before.
And so it's a little weird. They used to come to the meetings and present anything. Yeah. They haven't done that.
Yeah. We requested because we knew it was during the budget meeting, so I asked Lisa about it. They provided great documentation.
But, you know, we're doing more in the providing professional advice and consults and things. I think we're shifting our contribution from dollars to service, like discounts on things and helping to run programs and stuff, which I think it makes more sense anyway.
We absolutely do that more for GYS. We provide a building, and we do repairs every year to that building, and I think we charge them a dollar. And then we do a lot of in-kind support and help with them, less so with GGHP.
But we do.
A little bit, hardly any this year. It was very minimal this year. I think they backed off on programming as they recouped.
Come back and have...
What we do is we do, for example, I think one of their questions in their pack is like, well, what can you do for us? For ice skating example, for example, we charge them for ice time because that's very expensive, but we don't charge them for the building or staff that are there for, like if they used a party room or custodians clean up. They're charged directly for the ice time because that shouldn't be subsidized. But the room itself, they come here and use a room. If it's after hours on a Saturday, we'll charge them for attendant and custodian. Mm-hmm. But if it's during regular hours, like they came until 9 o'clock one night and a room's available, they usually don't get charged for that kind of thing.
Right.
Beach, I know we do things with them, but the beach.
Yeah, and
beach fashion, I don't think we charge them for that.
They charge $25 for the event, but they don't pay for the travel.
Right, exactly.
Right.
They charge money and we don't charge them back. So that's kind of things we do there. And then Nate will provide professional, he won't run their events, as sometimes they would like, but he will provide support,
Help them.
We have to watch him very carefully so he doesn't get burned out because all the service groups have found out how good he is and they're just like, and I'm like, nope, we have to back him back. So it's his nature, but we can't have him working every weekend, so or we'll lose him.
But we've done those things over the year, plus given a donation.
Maybe
a donation, still doing that, but we maybe offer maybe one of the times we don't charge for it.
Didn't we do half last year?
I mean,
they asked for more last year, and we gave
five.
We gave five.
In all honesty, I can see help subsidizing the direct recreation programs that don't compete with us. For example, they do an after-school program. That's the service project. GYS does after-school program. I can see, as they said in their memo, like the $5,000 we gave them last year subsidized their after-school program. That's direct in line with us. We don't operate a teen center. So I could see absolutely funding their after-school, a portion of their after-school program, without a doubt. Not funding their theater, because I think that's direct competition. We charge money. They charge it. But I think when I look through their budget, $5,000 to cover that after-school program. So the school's taking care of the in-school one. and we take care of health subsidizing that to totally that. Because I think it gets a little messy if we start giving away the ice skating time and they'll want more. I think it's just a clean, if you say, okay, here's your $5,000, and then look at GYS, whichever way you want. We already give them the building. Do you want to give them money on top of the building? Because GGHP, we only give money. We don't give facilities, correct?
Can we direct their funds? Can we say this has to go to somebody that's going to meet with us, or does it really matter?
I think we could.
Do the donation to your school. Like, oh, I want this to go to them.
Yeah, we say a letter. This money is we've given this to go for your after school oasis. I think they call it, right?
What it's worth. During the school year, they go to the oasis for recess.
Pardon me?
They go to the oasis for recess. So that.
And then what's the after school? There's after school one too.
After school programs. In school.
Oh, after school oasis they call it. It's the same name, but after school. Yeah.
Kids go and hang out there.
So they have to pay for that. The school doesn't do that. So.
I know, because my daughter goes every day during lunch too.
Yeah. She just tries to do that to get out of going
smart.
So would we be comfortable doing 5,000 again?
I'm comfortable with it, and I like that idea that it goes directly to that, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that will be documented.
Yeah, I will write that in the letter. This is.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with it.
Bart, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Carol?
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. We can't subsidize our own program, but we can subsidize a nonprofit.
We're not doing very well.
We gave 10
for a long time. Actually, one time we almost gave 15.
Yeah, that. Well.
Okay. And it's
I heard it's a great program. I'm sure my kids will use it.
It's after. I look at it as an after school team program, which we don't have a drop in team program. So it's something we don't offer. It's a niche there that we don't offer.
It's a one time thing. I have no issue with.
And I would say.
But it's not a compounding expense like we have with other areas that you see. I
just hope that all of our community partners don't come asking for money, because they'd all be within their rights to come say, okay, you know what?
I think they would have to prove why it's a recreation component, right?
Oh, think about it. All
right.
Of them.
You're right.
They're
I mean,
all.
That
I mean,
is
the
a,
garden club,
that's
the,
a very that's
the
a very
trail,
good point. Well, I think we do. I think we do. I think we do give to the garden club and we do. We provide the greenhouse.
The greenhouse. Yeah.
Which is a big. Yeah. It's expensive. So we do give back. We do give back to baseball, because we don't charge for their practice time. So we do give back to everybody else.
Let's get something for it. How about this?
Cash.
Would you feel more comfortable if we were to get an ad in the magazine, the GGHB,
no.
Ad for our services, the magazine?
I would say that we would like them to volunteer for our events.
You can ask them, look, there's nothing wrong with it. GYS volunteers for our events. You can say, hey, look, we're going to give this to you, and we're going to see you this year, but we do expect, you know, if you want to contribute, continue, either give us an ad in your book or post some of your camps or something like that. I don't see why not.
I'm not really into the ad.
But I'm okay with the ad too.
Get something for it.
Okay. But what?
They informed us that they didn't, since we cut their funding, that they didn't have the ability to help with.
Volunteer last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And they're volunteering.
I totally forgot about that.
You know what? I know what I want the ad for. I want the ad for summer camp staff. It's the right age.
What do they have? What kind of booklet do they have? What are you talking about?
The program for the
theater.
Yes. Get in
There's a program.
Yeah, people go to that play.
Yeah.
In their program, their play.
Yeah.
Get an ad for the summer camp.
These are tough times.
I agree.
And
summer camp,
you know,
including that for your CIT program or whatever.
Or for staff.
Yeah. Let's get something for it.
Okay.
I
agree.
Okay.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Well okay. done.
We'll ask back for them.
Well done.
And for GYS, I'll say just 5,000.
They don't have the same. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No one gives to them.
No.
They don't charge for their stuff, and it's really just like a lot of community.
Yeah. It's sort of a safety net program.
Yeah,
And then maybe next year go something a little bit more, and then slowly.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So we're good for 5K. We expect an ad in their program.
Got it.
And thank you for your service.
Okay.
All right. Well done. Thank you. Now, other business.
Lisa Shepherd and Kyle will present the information. And the first is discussion on green energy.
Turn it over, Kyle.
Sure. So the first part there, everyone had a memo in front of them.
This is the secondary thing that we were saying. Is that right?
It's right in front of you if there's a memo on your desk. There you go.
The one that was the memo prior.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Really kind of two parts to this memo, and the first one is a little bit more straightforward. At the regular board meeting on the 21st, we'll have before the board an action item to authorize Lisa to enter into a one-year fixed energy rate contract with NYMEC for electricity. We went through this back in July of last year, where we solicited proposals from three different brokers for energy prices. NYMEC was the lowest at the time. We entered into a 10-month contract with them. That 10-month contract would get us to the point, which is in March, of entering into a group bid alongside 175 other municipalities to capture lower rates. So really just wanted to make the board aware of that action item that will be before them in February, if there's any questions about that. We are anticipating, we don't know what the rates will be until the day of the group bid, but we are anticipating about a 30% reduction in electricity costs. John alluded to that earlier in the budget presentation. And we'll have people update the final budgets to reflect that. So that's the first part of it, just so everyone's aware. The second part is, in going through these discussions about a week and a half ago, we made aware of a potential for a green energy option, which utilizes renewable energy certificates. And essentially, you can pay a premium on your utility bill for the purchase of renewable energy certificates to support renewable energies as a source of electricity for our facilities. Still gathering information on that program, but before we do any more investigating, wanted to understand if the board even has a taste for paying premium in the amount of roughly 5.7% on our total electricity bills.
What would that be, the total? What's the total electricity?
Based on what we paid this year, it would be about $6,000. Now, a 30% reduction next year would be more like a $1,400 increase. And again, not looking for any hard definitive yes or no's.
We just don't want to waste Kyle's time if the board's like, we definitely don't want to do that. What we're doing is if we say that we support green energy, and we're putting our money behind that for that infrastructure. So
I would like to say the mission of the Park District is to support the environment.
That is one of our sustainability goals right now.
That is true.
Does everybody agree with that?
I think it's going to be, this kind of thing is going to be expected in the community. And total quality.
Is anyone else in the community doing this?
So
District 35 has their own geothermal.
Yeah, they have their own.
So my understanding is Highland Park District and the builder Highland Park are a green energy option, as well as Park Ridge. I have reached out to them to just kind of understand what the realized costs were when they entered into it and how it was perceived by the community. Again, trying to get all the information on what exactly the program is and how it's framed. It's a way to support renewables when you don't have the ability to install.
I love renewables. I do. I'm not going to get into this whole thing, but does the village do it here in Glen Cove?
I don't.
I can't.
They may be forced into it. The STF. I can't. No, they're going to make them. That's.
So do you think that's something we would like to pursue? We don't have to make an answer now, but okay. So the majority of the consensus is we'd like him to keep on the.
I think so far,
but that's $6,000 every year.
Annually. Well, 5.7% is the estimate going from
correct.
Brown or possibly.
Well, that's like you pay more, and you're supposed to be using less through the method, because you're paying to install the. This is why I don't have solar panels in my house.
We're only purchasing our power from green sources.
Yes.
To support.
Let's let Kyle explain it.
Yeah. Energy that's coming into our building is still coming from coal and other sources. It's like the whole pool is now has a little bit more green energy in it.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Covey's point, nobody knows
where
it's coming from. Yeah. The end source of the electrons coming in the building. It could be coal, it could be nuclear, it could be solar, it could be wind.
Yes.
The renewable energy certificates allow you to pay that premium that goes to those producers, therefore supporting the industry.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that you're directly connected to a solar
grid.
To Stephanie's point, though, I would almost, by the way, I think we're going to do it, so I think this is kind of a moot point, but it's almost like, which is better? Do do we invest and pay $6,000 more in this? Or do we take $6,000 and replace every one of our lights with LED? Do we, instead of buying a pickup truck, a 2023 pickup truck that's this, do we spend $6,000 more and buy a hybrid pickup truck? There's lots of ways
to plug it in.
I can't do that.
No place to plug it in.
And they're not there.
Right, but there's lots of ways to approach this. I'll tell you, I'm so indifferent because there's many ways to do it. So.
You know, I will say you acknowledge the power of optics,
yes.
And I think in this case there's power in the optics.
Well,
so,
and then we'll be doing those other. We are doing those other things too.
And we have done all of those. And if we could find a hybrid that we were able to plug in a facility that we can't,
no,
we
a,
would
a,
do
a,
it. So
plug in a hybrid.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
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 So.
It may not be. I'm not.
Okay, so we're not looking for a vote today.
No.
We just want to know if he should continue to pursue, give you more information. So if we even have three or two that say...
I'm not close to getting more information, although I'm probably closest to Stephanie's side.
We're
not close to getting more information.
We can enter into the one-year fixed contract at our normal supply rate, and then always talk about this information, more information, and enter into it.
And bring it down. If we're going to even.
Yep.
I do think if optics are important to us, it would be great. I don't even know all the things y'all are doing. I know that we grow, and I think it's phenomenal.
Did you read One Glencoe? Is that what it's called? Inside Glencoe. I keep on saying One Glencoe. Inside Glencoe has an article on all their sustainability issues. Okay, that has all of our sustainability. Whole list of them.
And I shall mention that we are.
Yeah. So we'll have sustainability committee come and do it and a presentation to the board, but it was in inside Glencoe. Yeah.
And it would probably impress people more than one pickup truck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It has power when you do something like that, and it helps define us. And it's not that much of. We saved $5,000 on the last thing anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I just feel like doing something that has those facts.
Yeah, I know, but that's not
the point. Concrete,
reasonable.
Yep. This is like, you don't know where this money's going.
Right.
I know.
Right, it's going for the certificate is where it's going.
We'll find more information out.
Yeah.
Okay. So let us move to discussion on owner park district purchase of items for Lakefront Park.
All right, so we're venturing down the road to start bidding Lakefront Park, and Kyle's been working with our architects and indicated we might have some long lead times on a few items, and so we want to talk about a little bit about that, and there's some items that we could purchase ourselves ahead of time. Throw it to Kyle.
So we're not talking about any lead times that are like the community hall ID project, but we are talking about some lead times that potentially could back up our targeted completion date of June 30th or pre-4th of July events. It's specifically the playground surfacing, the mounds, and the turf from Forever Lawn. The kind of situation we find ourselves in is we're looking to have the bids for the project before the board in March for approval to get the project rolling. However, if we wait until that time to order these materials that have a 8 to 10 week lead time, we could be pushing up against a June delivery date, which then would back up the completion of the playground portion. We do have the option of making this an owner item to purchase through Sourcewell, so we could pre-order it, you know, as soon as after the February board meeting, if that's what we wanted to do, and therefore buying ourselves, you know, 4 to 5 weeks of lead time. The caveat to all this is that we won't know the total project cost until we get the bid results in early March. So no indication from our cost estimates that the projects have come back over budget, but they are cost estimates. And so pre-ordering materials, you know, has a level of risk exposure. We just wanted to know if the board have pre-ordering it.
So items we buy in our Sourcewell, so those are guaranteed low prices. So whatever the bid comes in, those prices of those goods won't go up. It's just what if other things are. And the board, for some reason, decides not to go with the project and complete the project. I think, in my opinion, we really have to do the tennis court. You know, that's way past its useful life. But just wanted to get your feeling on that.
So
So if we don't have the materials in time, is the existing playground going to be there, or will it be like mud for the 4th of July?
We would fence it off, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be kind of, like, that's like a mayhem of kids playing on that
correct.
Playground that day.
So can I go second annual mud run?
Yeah, I mean, the
Fourth July mud run.
Behind a construction fence for this, the duration of the project. If we were to delay or back up on timeline for the playground, the expectation would be we'd be able to complete the tennis court work, the pathway work, benches, porta potty enclosure, all that other stuff, and then reduce the size of that construction fence to the footprint of the playground, which is relatively small. But it would, yes, it would be behind a construction fence during Fourth of July.
It's probably the most use that playground gets all year.
It's, yeah.
Right. And you know, if it wasn't Lakefront Park and the 4th of July event, I think the recommendation is just to wait until we get bids, but knowing how timing of things and the high visibility of that park would be, and then kind of just wanted to have that.
I mean, that's just for the event for summer, too, because that's...
Yeah, it's really summer, and the holders and the way it looks and what they think they're getting for the whole thing is...
It's nice for the non-pass holders who go to the beach and can't get down there.
Yeah.
So that's something to do.
Oh, that's entirely...
Yeah.
Valid point. Entirely valid. It's a huge issue, and I've seen families have to go to the... I mean, that's sort of their consolation prize, and it's it's really heartbreaking because it's terribly expensive for people, you know? It's just, I can't even think about it sometimes.
So,
are you telling me there's a greater than 95% chance that we're going to use this material, and you're just wondering if we should buy it now?
That's the other thing. So if we order this material and something goes awry and we have to delay, as long as we don't change the design of the playground,
you have
it has a shelf life. We
have a place to store this.
Yeah.
We're not going to be like, oh my gosh. Like
Can we put it in your backyard, Michael? Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. We would find a place to store. It's not ideal, but we will.
Yeah, right.
I completely defer to...
Yeah.
On a personal level, I actually don't think this is... I think this is a great decision for y'all to make. So that's my opinion, but I don't speak for the rest of the board.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
You comfortable with that?
Yep, I think that's great.
Good.
Perfect.
Okay. So
that's all I have.
All right. Well, now, the board, okay, that's it for you folks.
For me.
Yep. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel as mandated by Section 2.06.5 ILCS 120/2C1. Those present during the executive session will include all commissioners, and that is all.
Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Lisa, discussion?
Who was second? I'm sorry.
Bart second.
Bart, okay.
Any discussion? Lisa, please note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
8:39. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. Lisa, please record the time.
Okay, I did. 8:39.
Okay.
Adjourn meeting.
Okay, good.
Oh, I'm going to stop here.
I entertain a motion to return to open session.
Second.
Okay. Second. And this would be... okay. Note the time, which is...
9:18.
Thank you. Okay. where I am. I'm so tired. I don't know where. Wait, we're back in. So now I'm just doing a. Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Yeah.
Okay. Entertain a motion to adjourn. I don't care if I'm on. Okay. Roll call vote, please. Or just everyone say aye.
Aye.
Good. The time?
9:19.
19.